Peter Gagg, who drives it through.
We hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Ben's in trouble, there's deep kick. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is here!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson, defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jim Buster, are joined by Derek Watson. Welcome along, Des.
Thanks for having us on, Andy.
Major disappointment of the weekend as we exited the Scottish Cup at the fifth round. A late goal for the third game running against Inverness, a 2-1 defeat in the end. Jay, I'll start in a different fashion than usual and ask you a number of questions at once. What went wrong on Saturday? Who's to blame for it? And the biggest question of them all, I suppose, is how do we recover from such a disappointment and a really disappointing week, I suppose?
Well, the answer to probably all three questions is quite a few things. In terms of what went wrong, I think, as I said, quite a few things. I think the lineup for me was never really going to work again. Like Tynecastle, it was one of those lineups that when we heard what it was in the pub, we all kind of looked at each other and tried to work out how the hell we were going to line up. I don't think anybody would have expected that we were going to be getting into a game against Inverness, Cali, Thistle, who, yes, they're a decent enough side. They're round about ourselves in the league. But, you know, the kind of inferiority complex we seem to have went into the game with, I think kind of put us in the back foot, at least mentally, from the kickoff. When you go into a cup tie at home against a side who's, you know, around the same level as you are, then you should really be looking to win the game and take the game to them, not making all these random drastic changes and completely changing the way you play to kind of counteract this fantastic tactical machine that seems to be John Hughes. So that was disappointing. I think that the changes that we made, or lack of changes, you know, everybody was crying out for there to be changes to be made. They didn't come. Until it was perhaps not too late, but they were too late for the players coming on to make any real impact. So that was poor. And yeah, again, it was just like Fir Hill, there was a few performances that just weren't up to scratch. There was guys in the park who were a yard off the pace, yeah, or just didn't really look that into it. And it was just that, you know, so there was a few reasons, like any game, you know, that you lose, regardless of what people may say that it was down to decision in the last minute. It really wasn't. It was down to a few reasons. In terms of who's to blame, don't want to go down that road, because on Tuesday night there was a bit of an uproar because we were pinning, or someone was pinning blames on someone else. But I think if we're sort of suggesting Mark McGee, then I do think he needs to shoulder some responsibility, as I've already said. Complete inferiority complex to get into a home cup tie against Inverness and pick your team based on them. Complete lack of decisions, complete lack of direction, and then again, you know, it all boiled down to that decision at the end, which I don't think was really a free kick, and yet we've got this kind of rhetoric again where everything else is kind of ignored, and it's all really about the fact that, you know, it's all about the fact that that decision cost us. So he definitely would shoulder some of the blame, as would some of the players for their performances. And how do you build for next week? You just need to get over it. You just need to get on with it. You need to accept that that's once again another cup tie lost, and hope that we can it'll start to kind of see some light at the end of this ongoing kind of tunnel of being pretty poor.
Derek, I know it's been a common theme for a number of years now, disappointments in the Cup. This one was particularly hard to take, though, because I felt that we were in quite good stead going into the game, despite having a poor start to 2016. A home tie, it was very surprising to see us play one up top and not go for the jugular and get through, particularly given in the build-up to the game, Mark McGee had said that Inverness were so difficult to play against. You wouldn't have wanted a 1-1 draw and have to go up to Inverness in a midweek game.
Not at all. I think I can only really echo what Jay said as well. It was extremely negative. And for me, I thought it was extremely negative before the game even started, because you had Scott McDonald, who's a senior pro in there, who's won trophies in football, coming out and saying, you know, the Munnock game's our main priority, and as much as we're looking forward to the Cup game, we'd rather be playing in a league match this weekend. And I think if you asked over 3,000 Motherwell supporters that had paid, you know, the best part of £15 to get into Fir Park on Saturday, what was important to them, do you think it's been in a league match and a relegation battle that you kind of hope you won't be in, or do you think it's getting a decent run in the Scottish Cup and 25 years on for the last time you won it, actually making a challenge with a team that I think is capable of winning the Cup? When you look at the League Cup and the teams that are in that final, it was just really negative and it was embarrassing more than anything.
Buster, I must admit, the after-match comments from Mark McGee, when he's saying that the Kilmarnock game was the priority, that was a line that stood out for me. That seems to go completely against the visions of the club, which the budget is a top six finish and a run in neither of the cups. We obviously went out to Morton at the early stages of the League Cup. After getting back-to-back home ties, this was a real chance to push on, and I was quite surprised to see McGee disregard it. I don't know whether it's maybe just to shift the blame elsewhere or to play down the defeat, but an expression that kind of caught my attention, that's for sure.
It's definitely a strange one. You know, as Des says as well, I've actually not heard either interview, but, you know, I'd heard the gist of them, basically, and I'd heard that was mentioned. And, you know, as Des says as well, you know, this wasn't a freebie on the season ticket. You know, even if it was, you know, you're still paying for your season ticket there. If they were coming into the match with that attitude, you know, and I'd known about it, I might not have bothered to go and pay £15. It was, I don't know, as you say, I don't know whether it was just a deflection tactic. I don't know if the old sort of cliche about being able to concentrate in the league was rattled out or whatever, but it was a disappointing game. I was kind of easy with them trying something different. You know, he sort of set up in that, you know, continental five-man midfield with two holding midfielders and, you know, three attacking midfielders. My only problem with it was it clearly wasn't working after about 60 minutes. We got that corner and we scored that goal, and he immediately changed his mind to make the changes. He was, you know, he was going to make changes at that point, and he just changed his mind because we got a goal. But yeah, it was nearly one that we deserved at that point, I don't think. It's, you know, it's another cup down. You know, unfortunately, I'm getting a bit used to it, and even in the last couple of weeks, I'm a bit scared to be losing them quite easily, shrugging it off, and by 5:10, and I'm away enjoying myself doing something else.
Jay, that was one of my concerns after the game, like how quickly I'm over the defeat, and I don't normally have that feeling of nonplussness about Motherwell, but just now I'm kind of struggling a wee bit. The Thistle game, as much as we were disappointed in the car back, I think we were more disappointed that we had wasted our Tuesday night watching that dross than actually the fact that we had got beat. Dundee, the previous Saturday, we had played well and we were kind of robbed by a late goal. But again, I was just kind of, it just didn't seem to bother me that much. And that concerns me as a supporter of the football club. I don't know what it is just now, but there is a wee bit of feeling of apathy setting in. And towards the end of the game on Saturday, the fans certainly made their voices clear, and Mark McGee's clearly caught wind of that because he has responded to some of the criticism in his post-match interviews.
Well, in terms of the actual criticism at the game, you know, I don't need to you know, spend another podcast talking about my personal feelings of the Martin McGee in the press conferences and you know, interviews and things like that. I've got no idea what he's like as a person at home and things like that. Probably a very nice guy, but in terms of, you know, Martin McGee, the manager, off the park, I don't like him. In terms of the abuse, I did think it was a little bit early in terms of the amount of games he's been in charge, just from a, you know, just kind of a natural point of view. I think of a manager, he's still relatively new to the job, I think, and on paper he's got experience and he's a half-decent manager, so I was quite surprised, if not, you know, understanding. I can completely understand why a lot of people, you know, gave him that abuse. At the end of the day, if you rub people up the wrong way, be it in his first spell in charge or with the way he conducts himself on a regular basis at the moment, then you are going to be given less time. It's not just the same. It's not just that way for football managers. It's pretty much the same in any walk of life. If you're in a job where you aren't doing what you're meant to be doing and you've really pissed off the people around about you, then you're going to be given less time and people are going to react negatively to you far quicker rather than, you know, giving you support or encouragement. So that's, you know, that's par for the course. I was just a little surprised at how noticeable it was and how audible it was on the way out. In terms of the apathy, I think there's a few reasons for it. I think firstly because we just, you know, I think there is a sense of apathy on the park. You know, Des mentioned earlier about the fact that he thinks we've got a team that could actually go on and win the cup. I agree. I think we've got the players that could be top six. We've got the players that could be getting cup runs. And yet, you know, be it in Tuesday night at Far Hill, be it on Saturday, there's players that seem to be playing with a certain degree of apathy. And I think that translates into the stands. I think you've also just got the fact that, you know, you get into a run like we're on and you kind of start to accept that that's just the way you're playing. But I also think there's the fact that if you go back a couple of years ago, when there wasn't that apathy, when you were genuinely excited about going to games, and there was, you know, not just because of that was on the park, but just that kind of atmosphere and the kind of the passion of going to the game and stuff, that wasn't just because we were doing well, but it was also because there was that kind of sense of togetherness with the players. There was a sort of, you know, we're all in this together. You know, McCall, you know, people say, have positives and negatives to say about him, as, you know, the players in his team that weren't particularly good, and yet there was a kind of togetherness there. And I think that whether, you know, it's McGee's personality or certain things that have happened over the last couple of weeks with, you know, Ainsworth and things like that, I think that that togetherness isn't quite there at the moment, and there's a distance again starting to develop between the club and the fans again. And I think that that too has a lot to play with when you're talking about apathy from the stands.
We'll go on and talk about a bit of news today that the club have been punished for what is described as unacceptable conduct over a series of issues surrounding the playoff game against Rangers last year. Basically, it looks like the authorities have given the club 18 months to sort out, identify the issues and show evidence that they're sorting it before they'll decide on appropriate punishment, if there is going to be any consequences of what happened after that game. Derek, I'll start with you, mate. And what were your thoughts on, firstly, how long it took them to actually reach any sort of conclusion to this whole thing? Because we are now talking almost 8 months on from the game. And yeah, what you think the club can do to kind of try and address the issues.
I think the fact that it's took them 8 months to come to a conclusion that Motherwell were somehow guilty of misconduct, and then even after the 8 months you mentioned it, they've came to a conclusion, but they've not really came to a conclusion, have they? Which I think sums up the SPFL or Scottish football in general. I mean, they've found Motherwell guilty, but they've not really punished them, and then they're saying they're not going to punish them for, what, another best part of a year? Longer than that. I mean, what message does that send out to clubs? What message does that send out to supporters? I think it echoes across the game, that, and it echoes a lot of the press coverage that you're seeing, which is really negative towards Scottish football fans at the moment. I think what it tells me, and this is just a completely personal opinion, is that football fans aren't valued. You know, what I know, and I'm not going to say I know a great deal about it, but I've certainly been speaking to Alan Marshall at Fir Park and Alan Burrows since the game and they sat right away and they wanted to say, what can Motherwell do to tackle this, because they knew that there would be a backlash following the Rangers game. And I don't think they could have really done anything better. What should happen is the SPFL should judge the club on what procedures they had in place to stop this happening. Now, just to give you a wee bit of background, Motherwell had more police at that game on duty than they have ever had previously. They had more stewards than they have ever had at any other game. Did that stop the inevitable happening? No. Another thing that you've got to say, and it always comes back to that end section of the East Stand, doesn't it? And I know that the people in that end section of the East Stand, myself included, have been probably been guilty, you know, if not accepting the blame. But then what you have to remember is the person that started this pitch invasion was actually a little girl that ran on for the Cooper Stand. You know, it was then followed by grown men, women, children, etc., and on from all parts of the East Stand. It was a little girl running on the park that started that. Do you think she ran on there with the intentions of starting a full-scale riot or causing any sort of disorder? No, I don't think the answer to that is yes. I think the whole thing's a bit of a farce, to be honest. Motherwell, be it right or be it wrong, have these pitch invasions at the end of nearly every season. It is seen as a bit of a tradition. It isn't allowed. But if it wasn't against Rangers, and if Rangers hadn't just been beat 6-1 in a playoff final, and if Mosny hadn't punched Lee Irwin, do you really think we'd have seen the reaction that we'd seen? I don't. I think who should really be getting punished here is the Rangers player in question that almost started a full-scale brawl. Not a bunch of teenagers and a girl running on the park, you know, to celebrate winning a off keeping your team up. Essentially, it saved Motherwell Football Club. I mean, if we'd get beat that game and we'd have been down, we'd be looking at in a whole worse situation just now than we would be being found guilty of gross misconduct.
Buster, it's quite interesting how these things grow arms and legs, isn't it? Because you actually think back to the day and there was quite a fair distance between the fans on the pitch and the Rangers supporters. It wasn't as if there was blows exchanged between fans on the pitch or anything else. You can remember back to it and the police horse on the pitch, and it just seemed so exaggerated. And as times went on, there's people adding wee bits to this story, and it's obviously concluded at today's, or well, as Derek pointed out, it's not really been concluded, but at least there has been some sort of conclusion to the investigation, at least. It's given that it seems to happen across Britain when, for instance, playoff games are won down south. Pitch invasions are quite commonplace. The ticketing issues, Motherwell responded directly to Rangers, only given as an allocation of 950 and limited the Rangers' allocation. That's not even been mentioned in the whole thing. The blue flare that came on the park, are we really actually meant to believe that was a Motherwell supporter that threw it on sitting in the main stand? I've only sat in the main stand a few times in my life supporting Motherwell, but certainly I've not seen many people that are very likely to be lighting flares and throwing them on the field of play during a match, that's for sure.
I think he's had it there in the head, to be honest with you. You know, he says, if it wasn't against Rangers, you know, if it wasn't that circumstance, if there hadn't been players fighting on the park, you probably never, you know, Motherwell would probably have caught a 10, 20 grand fine or whatever the standard is for, you know, the usual pitch invasion, and that would have been the end of it. As you says, thinking back to that day when I was standing up the back of the stand, it was the police horses that were causing the most aggro, to be honest with you. They had been charged out on the field. The police horses looked as if they were frightened. They were all button up and down. Don't get me wrong, the Motherwell fans were wrong to go towards the South Stand with Rangers fans in it, but you know, as they got to the byline, they stopped there. The Rangers fans all come down to the front of the stand and stopped there. There was nobody stopping them if they all wanted to fight each other. They obviously didn't. They were just trying to goad each other a wee bit. The actual report itself, it appears to me as if they've just given us two end of seasons, basically not to have a, you know, to keep people off the park. And then they'll decide, you know, what they're going to do. As you quite rightly says, the flare that came off the main stand, the guy was leaving after Rangers had just lost the fourth goal in the playoffs, and he just lit it and threw it before he walked in the you know, down the stairwell and probably at the park. It just seems as though it's been an absolute farce, the whole thing. As you say, it's took them 8-9 months, whatever it is, to come to basically no decision. Also felt as if they were leaning towards the fact that this was caused because, or you know, there was some sort of aggro there because Muller refused to give Rangers any more tickets, which again is absolutely farcical. So I don't really know what they're actually wanting for us.
I think, Buster, there's an example that I'd take, and I know I mentioned earlier about Motherwell deploying more police and stewards than they usually did. Throughout the match as well, they also announced at least five or six times over the tannoys and on the scoreboard, please do not run on the park, please do not run on the park. You know, Motherwell done all in their power to stop the fans doing that, and unfortunately the fans still done it. I'll give an example that I always remember was a couple of seasons ago, towards the end of the year, we played St Johnstone away in the last game of the season. St Johnstone qualified for Europe and so did Motherwell. St Johnstone fans then all proceeded to run on the park, and then Motherwell fans ran on the park. There was no violence at all, there was no mock outrage for the police, there wasn't police horses mounted all over the park, and nothing came out. There was no violence, the exact same as there was no violence at the Motherwell Rangers game, apart from one player incidentally in a Rangers top. Nothing was done about that. St Johnstone on the punish, Motherwell on the punish, and neither they should be. You know, it was an end of season celebration, both teams getting into Europe. In this case, it was an end of season celebration, one team staying up, and the other team obviously weren't celebrating, and that's where the backlash comes.
I can't help but think that part of it is, you know, just having to be seen to do something. I mean, keep in mind who we're talking about here. We're talking about, you know, Rangers are involved in this. You know, the same Rangers that, you know, have managed to get, you know, Graeme Spears and Angela Haggerty sacked. The same Rangers that, you know, think that they can simply tell the BBC that they don't, you know, they're not good enough to come out. I mean, the BBC aren't good enough because they're shit, but, you know, they could just sort of pick and choose, you know, if the BBC are allowed in. You know, Rangers, their fans and the club have ideas far above their station. And, you know, we've all seen, you know, any time anything happened involving Rangers over the last, whatever, 8 months or whatever it's been, you would see tweets from countless Rangers fans saying, oh look, this guy's getting this, and Motherwell fans have got absolutely nothing. I mean, it's been building up, you know, there's all these disgruntled Rangers fans outraged that nothing's happened. So I get the impression that a lot of it is just the case of being seen to do something. But of course, they can't really do something because, as Des rightly points out, the club themselves have probably done as much as they could. Obviously, there was a bit of chat about, you know, Rangers fans turning up early on and buying tickets before they really kind of clamped down in the whole ticket situation. But other than that, I don't really know what else Motherwell would really be expected to do in those situations. And part of me just thinks that it is the SPFL, you know, being seen to do something just to try and appease, you know, Rangers. And in terms of, you know, as Buster said earlier, the idea that we should somehow be punished for not giving Rangers more tickets is just absolutely laughable. It's an absolute joke. You know, it should be in absolutely nobody else's concern how many tickets we give to any other team, assuming we are, you know, abiding by whatever it is, 5-10%. You know, the idea that they would use that to kind of justify some sort of punishment on the club is an absolute farce.
Derek, there's been a lot of issues recently and over the course of the season, really, regarding treatment of supporters at games, and a few spring to mind. The game last week at Fir Hill, there was a massive overreaction by police and stewards. The game at Capello as well, that really seemed to kick off out of nowhere, really. What's your take on how the season's went, and is there a danger that, given how highlighted this story has been over the investigation, that there's maybe going to be a wee bit of different relations between the boys and the club, given that there has been a wee bit of a backlash in the mainstream media?
There certainly has, and I think at times, when possible, we've sat down with the club, you know, and tried to iron things out and say, what can we do to make this better, and also what can you do to make this better for us? Because ultimately there is two sides to every story. In some instances you can't defend the indefensible. You know, you are always going to get, and I kind of touched on this on Steelman Online in a post that I made the other day, you always are going to get with a group of predominantly young guys with that kind of dynamic, you know, there's sometimes they push the boundaries. You are going to get one or two people in there that do act like idiots. What should the boys do themselves? They should probably try and police that as much as they can. But I honestly believe that we do a very good effort at actually doing that. I think somebody actually mentioned going to war. The Welsh boys have been going to war with the police and stewards, and I think that's just a lot of nonsense. I understand there's been a backlash following the final game of last season against Rangers, and the media have been kind of trying to hammer football fans and hammer Motherwell fans as well since then. What I think you need to remember is the Well boys aren't just a group of young boys now. You know, we've been doing this for the best part of 10 years. Came into Firth Park. Well, we've been going since we were kids, right? But essentially, what we'd done when we came into Firth Park was initially to try and bring a bit more colour and atmosphere to football stadiums across Scotland, where that was dying out. You know, there wasn't really much to sing and cheer about, and I think we've done a lot good over the years. What people don't really see, I'll give you an example for the Morton game. That was just a simple case of St Mirren stewards, that also work at Capital, being absolutely ridiculously over the top, inflaming a situation that wasn't there, you know, antagonising people who are, you know, anywhere from 13 years old up to fucking 30 years old. Sorry for swearing there, but it's getting me slightly frustrated even thinking about it. When you're getting these stewards that were antagonising people, physically threatening them, saying, come on, take me a square go. And then what happens for the earth is Motherwell get a goal, the stewards barge in, there's some toing and froing, and now we've got essentially four or five people that sit in that intersection of Firth Park facing charges up in the court for serious assault on police officers, breach of the peace, you know, under the Offence of Behaviour at Football Act, for something that just simply wasn't true. And essentially, the majority of the cases will go through courts and they'll get chucked out and they'll get found not guilty, like the majority of these cases do, unfortunately. But what goes along with that is people are losing their wages, in some cases they're losing their jobs. You know, it's the stress and trauma that comes out. What if I end up with a criminal record? Similar to the young boy who's been in the media this week, who's looking at 7 months in jail for letting off a smoke bomb. Again, I touched on that on Steelman Online. Was what he done illegal? Yes. Was it irresponsible? Yes. But does it merit 7 months in jail? You know, I certainly don't think so. And what a lot of people see is what goes on in the stand. You know, they'll see toing and throwing with stewards, but they don't really see what goes on away from the football. And that's these people, for example, the ones that I touched on that are up in court for the Morton incident. They didn't get lifted on the night. You know, police and stewards watch CCTV footage or what they thought, where people looked threatening and aggressive, and then went to their houses at 7 in the morning on a Monday morning, kicked in their door and took them to a police station, you know, and then banged up myself for a good few hours. It's really, really damaging to a lot of these people's futures for something that all they want to do is go along, sing songs, create an atmosphere, jump around, you know what, be a bit boisterous, of course they do, and sometimes they want to push the boundaries, but are they really great? Are they really, like, causing serious crimes? Like, you know what, it all needs to be put into proportion, and that might sound a bit sensationalist for me, but you really need to think about it. These are people that haven't fallen into crime in any other way and wouldn't fall into crime, yet they've been targeted as if they're some sort of dangerous individuals, you know, that are a spawn in society, and it's built up throughout the season. We've done things that haven't necessarily pleased the majority of the Motherwell support. For example, as you mentioned, I know you guys have publicly criticised on the podcast the kind of joint protest, if you could call it that, with Celtic supporters, but more notably the Green Brigade. And that's not an organisation or a group that sits well with us at all, you know, far from it. But it did help highlight these issues, regardless of what you say about it. You know, it got in the mainstream media. Not all it was positive, to be fair, but we're just trying to do all we can to highlight that there's people out there whose lives are being ruined by the actions of stewards. In other cases, the police at football, you know, and it's not pretty and it's not enjoyable.
Just to play devil's advocate for a second, though, do you think that perhaps certain people have maybe taken advantage of the good relationship you guys have got with the club and almost been given an inch and taken a mile sort of thing?
I wouldn't say people have taken advantage of the good relationship. I think that there is people, as I mentioned, you know, that can't be defended, regardless of your opinions, for example, on pyrotechnics are not allowed within a football stadium, and doing that will inevitably attract a bigger police presence. But I think there is another side to that coin, and I think if you look across stadiums in Scotland at the moment, the numbers of police is declining. It can only be seen as a good thing in their eyes, because it makes it a much more enjoyable place to be. You know, there's not as much animosity around there. If there's no place there, it usually sends off. The idea that it's, you know, there's no danger within the stadiums. I think what the police are also doing is they're seeing that there's less police-free games. For example, the majority of Motherwell home games are police-free, and when they are there, in instances when people aren't letting off smoke bombs or flares, they're looking for excuses to lift supporters, and they're also trying to justify their stats and hit their numbers, you know. If they can justify being there, then it's going to mean that there'll be more games in future. And I think there's an unhealthy balance between that. Of course there is, within all supports, people that take it slightly too far and justify a police presence, but there is also instances where police presences aren't justified, and maybe on occasions the police force might look for excuses to justify that themselves.
3 days after start recording, we're back to finish this podcast. We had various technical issues over the last couple of days. Welcome back, guys, and we'll just try and pick up as much as possible where we left off.
Aye, crack on.
No bother.
Jay, where would you say that the boys go from here? And it'd be nice to get your perception in the whole thing. Obviously, as an outsider looking in, but I suppose a lot of the time you're also kind of on the inside as well, because we sit very close to them. We've enjoyed a lot of good days out with the guys, and I personally feel quite torn in some issues, but I'd like to hear what your thoughts are.
Well, I think we would all three is. I think I've agreed time after time on the podcast that there is plenty of examples of heavy-handed policing, jobs worth stewards. I've said many times that I think the bill itself is really, really poorly written legislation. It leaves so much open to perception. It just gives police and stewards free rein, whether deliberately or accidentally, to you know, criminalise for things that necessarily aren't threatening or aren't offensive. So there needs to be changes, but I suppose in terms of where the boys go, I suppose it just depends where they want to go. For me, I think the biggest problem is there isn't a real kind of opposition to the act. There isn't really in wider kind of Scottish society and in Scottish politics, it's just not an issue. It is not an issue in the slightest. In Scottish politics, it's barely a footnote. You know, the opposition parties in Holyrood will suggest that they oppose the act, but Kezia Dugdale never stands up at First Minister's questions and quizzes Nicola Sturgeon on, you know, the criminalisation of all these young guys at football matches. It's just a complete, you know, the idea that it's a big deal in Scottish politics is a complete, you know, nonsense. It's not. I don't know if people genuinely believe that, or whether, you know, it's just, I suppose if you're in that world every week, you're going and you're experiencing it, as we do. You know, as you say, we are perhaps not in the midst of it, but we're always there or thereabouts. You know, we've had our own run-ins of stewards at like St Mirren Park and things like that. So, you know, we have experienced it as well, but not nearly as much as a lot of the guys like Des and others. I think there isn't that kind of genuinely, I don't know, a proper voice against it that the people you're trying to convince would see as being credible and respectable, because that's what it needs to be. This is legislation we're talking about that you need to challenge and you need to get changed. And the problem at the moment is it's far too easy for the folk who support the bill, or for those who don't really care either way, it's far too easy for them to look at it and say, oh, it's just football fans who are annoyed that they can't behave the way we want to behave. And because that is the perception that's kind of given out. And it's given out for a lot of reasons. It's given out because the media, you know, completely overblow. I mean, you look at the fact that the Fans Against Criminalisation were going for a meeting, or going for a committee kind of gathering at the Scottish Government to put forward their points of view, and it happened about 2 days after the papers were absolutely full of the Celtic fans, you know, setting off flares and smoke bombs and their cup tie. So, you know, there's the media aspect, but there's also, you know, decision-making. You know, very rarely do you see football fans kind of be self-critical and self-aware of the guys who are doing their cause a complete disservice and being really counterproductive. And I also think in terms of the kind of examples that are used, Des mentioned earlier in the week about the guy who set off the smoke bombs, and that was really, and you know, is facing a good few months in prison. And that was really widely shared on my Facebook, at least, and on Twitter. And it was kind of, sort of held up as an example of this kind of criminalisation of football fans. And we even had a protest at the Inverness game with the sheet held up. But the problem is that if you already support the cause, then fair enough. But if you're trying to convince people who either are against you or are yet to make their mind up, if they then go and look into it and find out that the guy was arrested for trying to cover his own identity and then was given bail conditions that involved not going to football matches but still went to a football match, you lose a lot of sympathy there. I'm not suggesting that the time, you know, his sentence was adequate. I'm not suggesting that it's still not heavy-handedness. But when you're using guys like that as an example, that's the quintessential example of a football fan who thinks he can do what he wants, even when he's told not to. And then that just plays into the whole perception that that's what all the football fans are like when they're campaigning against us. We know that there is heavy-handedness. We know that there's a reasonable argument there. But it's trying to get people to accept that. And I think that there's a lot of times when, you know, some of these guys who actually do cause trouble, or, you know, the full story isn't quite put out there. And these guys are almost turned into martyrs for the cause. You know, oh, that guy was sent down for 5 months for setting off a smoke bomb. And other people kind of go, well, no, he wasn't. He broke his bail. He breached his bail conditions. And then it kind of just gets into this cycle where any genuine argument from football fans, it's kind of like a boy who cried wolf scenario. Any genuine arguments, like at St Mirren, when the kettling, that day the kettling was just unbelievable. It's one of the most ridiculous things I've seen at the football. But when that's put in alongside the other things that go on at football, it just kind of gets diluted. And that's the issue. Without a kind of genuinely sort of well thought through and organised attempt to put forward the case, it kind of just gets diluted when it goes to the people you're trying to convince. And so unfortunately, when you're up against like Police Scotland, who are putting out absolute fantasy stuff about, you know, the return of hooliganism and stuff like that this week, when that's what you're up against, it just seems to be a losing battle. And I cannot see any way that there's going to be a satisfactory resolution in it all.
Derek, the wider audience was mentioned there, and that's quite an interesting point for me. Do you think it's difficult for people that, for talking sake, sit in the main stand and have no association with you guys, don't know you guys, perhaps pick up the newspapers, read the online forums and think, no, these guys are nothing but trouble, and basically make up their mind without knowing the facts, or put what facts are put in front of them by the greater media rather than actually finding out a bit more?
I think that is vital. You know, I think the media play a massive role in this. If not, I think the media play probably the biggest role in criminalising football fans, almost as much as they do as the police do or the government do. And the reason I'll tell you that is, I'll not mention them on here, but there was a certain journalist phoned me last week or the week before, and my number was passed on to him. He wanted to speak to a football fan that goes along in these supporters groups who might be pro pyrotechnics or pro smoke bombs. So I started speaking away to this journalist, and he's pretty well known in the Scottish media, and I started telling him, you know, my opinion on smoke bombs and flares is, of course they're illegal. Well, they're illegal, you cannot justify them in Scottish football grounds. But like I've said in this podcast many times, I think there should be discussions as to what we can do for alternatives for people that may find that interesting and may want to do that. Now, I know you mentioned the general audience. For me to suggest that to a general audience that are reading the Daily Record each week or reading The Sun, where they're essentially telling you that if you're in an area where you breathe in smoke from a smoke bomb or smoke from a flare, you can potentially die, you're going to think that me suggesting that there should be an area in Scottish football or an area in certain Scottish football grounds where people are allowed pyrotechnics is absolutely mental. But once I started talking to this journalist and putting across my point that I've been in different countries, you know, where pyrotechnics is legalised, where it's passed by the fire brigade, where it's passed by the clubs at safety meetings in advance, he told me that he didn't want to speak to me. And he actually says, you're not really the type of person that I'm looking for, because what I'm really looking for is someone that will stand up in front of a camera, blurred out, identity not said in this interview, and say, I go to the football and I fight at the football and I think everybody should be allowed to light off flares. And I said to the guy, are you being genuinely serious? He's trying to put together an article for the national media, an article to go out on the national news as well, I believe, which essentially just paints one picture that all football fans that are pro-pyrotechnics, that are pro-standing at football, that want to go along in these groups that aim to create an atmosphere, are hooligans. And I says to him, I think that you're trying to paint a real narrative here. I says, why don't you take a balanced view on it? He's somebody that isn't a 15-year-old boy, you know, that wants to go out and let all smoke bombs and brag to his mates at school on a Monday morning that he done it. I says, why don't you actually listen to a group of people that they're willing to say to you, they're not allowed, we understand they're not allowed, but let's have a discussion about the alternatives. And as soon as you put that argument across, it was just like, all right, I'll speak to you later, see you later on, bye. And the media are constantly, don't want to hear any valid arguments about it. And I understand Jay's point that he made. I completely understand that there is people out there that when you're trying to fight against an act and then they let off a smoke bomb or they get arrested for, you know, scuffling with a steward or whatever, it goes against the grain and it makes it harder for you to prove your point. But what makes it really hard to prove your point is when you know the media are completely up against you, because someone standing up and telling you how bad the stewarding was at the St Mirren game isn't going to sell papers. But Plaston soldier of 18-year-old has let off pyrotechnics in a football ground and he's going to jail for 5 months is going to sell papers. So it's kind of, it's, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place here. Like, that nobody wants to listen to football fans that are seriously oppressed in a country. They want to just see the sensationalist headlines because that's what people buy into.
Bust, I suppose the prime example of that from this season was the Morton game, and you were standing beside me that night getting text messages from family members worried about your well-being because Chick Young, within minutes of the what was an overblown, ridiculous incident, was reporting that there was major problems amongst the Motherwell supporters. It was blown well out of proportion, and that's how easy it is for a story to start. And as we've already discussed in regards to the playoff game, it grows arms and legs very, very quickly.
Yeah, you're right. You say it, Morton. Somebody had heard on the radio, you know, there was a wee bit of, well, we seen it was a wee bit of a scuffle. Somebody had heard on the radio there was mass brawls amongst the Motherwell fans, whatever it was that was reported. And, you know, my mother and father texting me, asking me what was happening. And, you know, it's, and it got me really annoyed because, you say, you know, I think there was one sort of push and shove with a steward. That was it, really. The game was stopped to let the police in. Then, as you say, through the radio, through the papers the next day, it was blown way, way out of proportion as well. I think in general the media is like that, to be honest with you. You know, even going to quotes from Mark McGee this week and stuff like that, you know, there's tiny wee inverted commas around about two or three words. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if the media were taking quotes from within quotes. But, you know, that's how, as Dee says, you know, it's good news doesn't sell papers. Good news won't make people tune in at the telly. You never tune into the 6 o'clock news and hear about the 544 million buses that made their journey that day without any hassle. So as Dee says, it's a hard place to be in, especially if, you know, guys like him and, you know, football fans around about throughout the country are trying to find a way to enjoy themselves without actually breaking the laws, which, you know, I think is maybe the first place for these groups, whether Motherwell fans, Celtic fans, whatever. These groups, you know, have to stick to the laws basically before they're given any more sort of leeway.
Well, sticking the theme of talking about football supporters and a very interesting protest by the Liverpool supporters at the weekend to walk out their home fixture against Sunderland after 77 minutes as a protest about next season's pricing within the club. The dearest ticket in the main stand will be £77. We've discussed in great depth in the podcast before the overpricing of Scottish football, not quite to the extent of down south, but when you consider the huge amounts of television money, billions of pounds invested in the English Premier League to broadcast their game around the world, I was reading that to actually charge a cap of £20 per away ticket at grounds, it would only cost each club £1 million, which is very much a drop in the ocean for these big clubs. Scottish football, though, still has the same problems, Des, in terms of overpricing. I'll use Partick Thistle last week as an example, and by no means are they the worst, but £22 for a cold, wet winter's night. The pitch was an absolute bog. The standard of the game was really, really poor. It's very difficult to get your money's worth, isn't it?
Well, completely. It's interesting you asked me that tonight, all nights, because I've actually went along to watch Brayhead Clan in the ice hockey tonight, and that was a Thursday night. I went along, I ended up paying £15 because I bought a ticket on the night. It was late, but there was tickets available for an adult at £10 and £5 for a kid. You can go along, you know, you get a hot dog for a couple of quid, you can buy a beer if you want. It's completely family entertainment, and it's completely catered, you know, to make the customer, if you want to call them customers, I tend to use that term loosely, and especially in football, but at the end of the day, I suppose we are, they make the customers feel valued. It's an overall product, and Scottish football as a whole, and probably the whole of the UK actually, I don't feel as if I'm valued when I go along to Scottish football. You go along, and as you mentioned, I mean, I think I paid, what was it, 24, 22 quid to get into Thistle last week. And it's freezing, you know, like, they're pouring bottles of Iron Brew, 2 litre bottles of Iron Brew, into a plastic cup and then charging you 2 quid for it. It's just like, it's the only sport, or the only industry in the world, I think, where you can go along and constantly get treated like shit and expect you to come back and pay the same money every single week, week on, week in, week out. But I think Scottish football is in a real danger if it keeps doing that, because like ice hockey, you've got sports like, I don't know, basketball, dare you say, even rugby. Lots of different things popping up. You've got a cinema that you can take your kids to. There's theme parks on your doorstep. It's in a real danger. You're losing out to families and losing out to people who are continuous customers unless it gets its act in gear and starts charging reasonable prices. But I think there's a lot more than the argument to the prices. I think you need to be valued, and I think you need to give people more for your money. It's about turning up and making people want to come back. And at the moment, we touched on it earlier in this podcast, there's a real apathy towards going to Motherwell games. And I can't remember the last time I turned up to Fir Park and genuinely thought, I can't wait to go back there.
Jay, it's really interesting for me. I know that the demand's there for English football, so it might not make any difference in terms of Anfield that will still be sold out. They're still waiting lists for season tickets. Scottish football's completely different, though. And I think the interesting thing for me is that the demographic of football fans now is changing greatly. It's not young adults anymore. It's going to be the more wealthy that are able to afford to go to the football week in, week out. And that's going to have a direct effect in atmosphere and how enjoyable the match day experience is going to be. I don't really want to be sitting in a stadium where people are sitting in their hands and politely clapping along. You do like a wee bit of a boisterous atmosphere. You look at games in the television that are broadcast in the English Premier League. It's the Crystal Palace games, it's the Stoke City games that there's an atmosphere at, the kind of smaller clubs, if you like, in the big league. The game's in a real danger of dying a death. Its attendances are well down as it is. And if the price continues to rise, then people will seek alternatives like the Brayhead Clan, like the Glasgow Warriors, the Glasgow Rock. Football needs to wake up, and it needs to wake up fast.
Absolutely. Yourself and Des are both absolutely spot on. I think what it boils down to is there's that kind of misconception in boardrooms and, you know, owners basically believe that, you know, they look at football and they see that kind of underlying tribalism, the kind of the passion that people have for their football team, the massive role that football teams play in people's lives and in their identity and in their community, and they misinterpret that as undying loyalty. They misinterpret it as blind loyalty. You just have to look at the Scotland Supporters Club for the last qualifying campaign. Completely attempted to completely rip off the fans with their season ticket prices. You know, the season ticket, you could buy your all your home tickets in one package. And the prices were absolutely ridiculous. It was obscene. And they were asking you to pay it all, you know, up front, and it was just absolutely unreal. And it was purely because the SFA looked at the Scotland fans and said, there are loyal fans who will follow the team wherever, and we can charge them whatever the hell we want and they'll pay it. And what actually happened was a lot of fans said, well, no, we're not interested. And this campaign, it's dropped down, I think for an SSC member, it's 125 quid for the 5 home qualifiers. So 25 quid for a home qualifier, including the game against England. It's not great, but based on, you know, modern prices and based on the prices that were playing in the last campaign, it's actually, you know, quite a good deal in context. But that's what it is. It's just clubs completely, you know, ripping the piss out of fans because they recognise that football's unique as a business. It's unique because they know that it's an underlying emotional attachment. It's a sentimental attachment. It's a loyalty there that they can manipulate and they can take advantage of. And they know that people will still keep coming back and keep coming back. But as both you guys have said, you know, that only goes so far. And you're going to get to a point, particularly when you do have, you know, other sporting teams like the Warriors, like the Clan, etc., where people can go enjoy their day and then start to build, you know, an emotional and sentimental attachment to another team and another sport and start to get the same kind of reward or whatever you want to call it from going to those games instead. And you're right, Scottish football is on its arse because the folk who run it, for a start, are absolutely clueless. But even the folk, you know, who claim to have a club's best interests at heart are still guilty of completely taking advantage of football fans. And it's not just prices. You know, Des touched on the fact that you want to go and feel valued and you want to go enjoy your day. You know, you need to be looking at things like get the price in the food, you know, safe standing at the ground. You know, I know there's talk about whether or not you can have a pint at the game, you know, that was starting to creep back in. You know, all these things need to be addressed. It's not just the price in the football, it's the entire match day experience, because at the moment it is purely that blind loyalty and purely that emotional attachment that keeps people coming back, because it certainly isn't the football on offer, it certainly isn't the match day experience, and it certainly isn't the prices.
Buster, that's quite a big point that Jay made there regarding the food and the drink at football as well. You're going there and spending £2.20 for a small cup of Coke. Derek pointed out the Iron Brew is poured from a 2-litre bottle at what, £1.50 maximum into a cup at Fir Hill. You're getting charged an absolute arm and a leg for these things. I suppose in a sense you're punishing the club by going to the game and not buying a programme, not buying anything from the kiosks. But maybe that's the wake-up call they need, football fans, to actually vote with their feet and show these clubs they're not going to stand up to the ridiculous pricing, and more so taking them for granted as well. You're just expected to come and renew your season ticket to follow the team regardless of how well they're playing. But it's an entertainment business first and foremost, and football fans just simply aren't being entertained.
Yeah, you're right. To be honest with you, I couldn't tell you the last time that I actually bought anything at Fir Park, whether it be a pie or, you know, a drink or even a programme. The other way day, you know, you maybe get a pie or something because you've had a good bevy in you and, you know, you're thinking you better get something to eat at least. but again, you know, as Jay's pointed out as well, It's about maybe finding loyalty elsewhere. I think one of the other sort of dangers to Scottish football, when I was, you know, 10-year old, there wasn't people who had a second team. Everybody you talk to these days has got a second team, and they're all from England, you know, and England's not that far away really. The games are very easily accessible on telly. You know, this loyalty can come through watching your Sky telly and house for whatever it is you pay for your subscription, or your BT as it'll probably be next year or whatever it is. And you know, you can probably go up and down 3 or 4 times a year. That's starting to become people's choice of, you know, what to do. I know people who used to go to even Celtic and Rangers matches who won't pay the prices anymore because 90% of their games are on telly anyway. So, as you says, you know, there's this hope that football fans will just return no matter what. But if I ever went to the FITBA and it was anywhere near £77, unless Mullow had somehow got to the Champions League final and it was £77, you know, if I ever went anywhere near the FITBA and they tried to take £77 off me, I would seriously never go back. You hear people say, I'll not go back all the time, but if the FITBA got anywhere near that price, I don't think I'd go anywhere near it.
Well, the thing is as well, then, you've got to, for instance, Liverpool, Arsenal, an Arsenal fan coming from London to go to one of these games, £77 ticket, but then you've got to take into account travel, food, drink and everything else. That's absolute extortion. And to do that every second week following your club, for the crime of actually trying to follow a football team, is horrendous. I noticed that the Football Supporters Federation have got their 20s Plenty campaign, but that was launched way back in January 2013. And despite the fact it's been looked over by the English FA, there's never anything came out of it. The clubs haven't got behind it, which, when you consider how small a part people paying into the ground is in English football, that's, in terms of revenue, that's horrendous that they've not actually went for that. They just clearly view supporters as absolute mugs.
Well, even, you know, just to bring it back up here as well, there's obviously, you know, the prices, whatever else you're paying. When you're talking about your travel there, there's also, you know, things like, you know, the local travel options they think about as well, because the game coming up on Tuesday, Dundee United, is that the one that was from the 2nd of January or whatever it was that we were going to go to?
It was Boxing Day.
Boxing Day, there was no trains on whatsoever. So essentially, what was it, 7 or 8 of us were getting an 8-man taxi, and we're going to get an 8-man taxi to Dundee. You know, I mean, a wee bit of help for the, you know, the travel authorities there when they went amiss. But as you say, it's when it comes to your tickets, your food, everything, it all adds up. You think you can maybe get away with, you know, £40 or whatever on a away day. You end up spending £140, no bother.
Yeah, you would think as well, with the inconvenience of the game being cancelled first time round, the two clubs would come together and try and reach some sort of arrangement to try and make it enticing. Let's face it, not many people are going to go, oh, Dundee on a Tuesday night, that's for me. But there will be people, including myself, that are going to make the journey. But there's not really much incentive. And maybe it's people like myself and you guys that are the problem, because we continue to go.
It's interesting you mention that, Andrew, because we, a couple of years ago now, and it was kind of divided the Motherwell support again. I know it's a bit less of an issue than the ticketing pricing for many people, but Dundee United decided to ban the drum. And this was before they had all the noise complaints with the neighbours that don't like noise coming from a football stadium, believe it or not. But we made a stand, and it was a Friday night game, and Dundee United, which had a wee bit of hassle up there before with fans getting in and the drum not getting in, and then they decided to ban it. So we said, you know what, the game's in the telly, let's not go, let's go watch the match in the Cooper Suite and give Motherwell our money. And it turned out to be a really, really good night in there, and I don't advocate not going to Motherwell games and watching the game in the telly. That's completely against everything that I usually stand for. But made a stand, and Thompson turned around the next time and says, you know what, bring your drums, we've lost out on 200 people, you know, paying £20 a head almost. And it maybe is the only way to show these clubs is if you keep treating fans like shit, they're not going to turn up. And you're absolutely right, Andy, because we are the problem. I was sitting in work this afternoon debating how am I going to get to Dundee next week for Edinburgh. It shouldn't be that way. It should be a case of, why are you organising these games in Boxing Day? You know, when there's no public transport, when a lot of people do like to have a drink on Christmas Day, it means you can't drive up there the next day. You guys mentioned you were going to get a taxi. I mean, how much is that going to cost you before you even pay into the game? It's just a complete lack of common sense and a lack of respect towards fans.
Yeah, I'm sure this will certainly be something that rumbles on. What we're going to do is we're going to record following the game on Tuesday night against Dundee United. That podcast should be out round about this time next week. But we'll preview the Kilmarnock game first on Saturday. Busta, it's been a really tough start to 2016. Still without a league win so far this year. Kelly sitting in that playoff position at the moment. I previewed the last four or five games saying it's a huge game, but this one is a six-pointer, and it's a relegation six-pointer.
Yeah, you're right there. You know, and as you said, Dundee United being our next game doesn't help either, you know, so 2 6-pointers in the trot, you would say, you know, but I've no managed to catch any of the pre-match interviews. I know it's McManus, McGee, but I've not managed to catch them yet. So I don't know what was said in them, but it's one of those games again where we, you know, we're going to have to bring out all the cliches and say we just have to win it. I don't think there's any other option. It's maybe not the end of the world if we draw, but I think a lot of people having their issues with McGee. You know, everybody's quick to turn on him, and for his sake as well, we basically need to turn up Saturday here and win.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jay, I think the fact we beat Kilmarnock four times last season. We lost the first game, sorry. We've beaten them in the last four meetings. We've got a good record against Kelly, and hopefully we can continue that. It'll actually be five meetings. We've won five of the last five with Kilmarnock. So, considering they were struggling last season, they're struggling again this season. We've got a wee bit of momentum going into this game, certainly with a run over them, but you just never know what to expect with Kelly. They can be absolutely atrocious or they can be fantastic. They're a very strange side.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of records against teams, I don't tend to give that too much thought because, you know, it's a completely different team on Saturday. It's, well, not a completely different team, but it's a completely different game. Players will be in different mindsets. You know, I don't know whether McCulloch will have got, you know, a reaction from the players, whether they'll maybe, you know, be wary that they've got potential new managers in the stand watching them and they want to impress. There's like a lot of things that could, you know, kind of make Kilmarnock a far better team than perhaps we're expecting them to be. But I would say, you know, of the two games, I think 4 points is a must. I think anything other than at least 4 points is completely unacceptable based on where we are and based on the players we've got. We spoke earlier in the year on the podcast about how important February was going to be because of the number of fixtures we had and because of the actual, you know, who we were playing during that month. And I think of the fixtures, I think these two are by far the most important because if things go wrong in these two fixtures, then we're in serious trouble because we really aren't that far away from the split. You know, we are getting to, you know, the old cliche of the business end of the season. So if things don't go well in these two games, it is, you know, it is going to start going, you know, it's going to start being a bit bit nervy kind of the last, you know, couple of months of the season. So I think, you know, whether it's a win and a draw at Tannadice or we manage to get a point and on Saturday and go up to Tannadice and win, I think anything less than 4 points out of these two games won't just be disappointing. I think it would be completely unacceptable.
Des, it's going to be interesting to see how the players react to three games where they've suffered disappointment late on. Dens Park was a good performance followed by very poor displays against both Thistle and Inverness in the Cup. How do you feel that the manager will pick the players up, particularly given how hostile and volatile the atmosphere was towards the end of the Cup game, towards the manager?
I think it's important that the players make an effort. We've got a lot of senior pros in the dressing room that should know how to take these defeats on the chin and move on with them. They've played in very important games themselves, like your McDonald, you know, your McManus, Hamill, Basley, etc. And you'd like to think that they'd be a positive influence on the younger players. You mentioned the manager as well, and I think it all comes down to the manager's team selections. We mentioned it earlier when we spoke about the Inverness match. I just thought playing one up front was extremely negative at home to Inverness. If you play one up front at home to Kelly, I'll be very, very surprised. Or we should be surprised, but with it being McGee, as you'll know, I'm not his biggest fan. I wouldn't be surprised if he was just so stubborn because he knows the fans want two up front, that he'll play one up front. You know, just because he's not caving in, because he's not admitting defeat, he doesn't want to admit he's wrong. He really needs to go out, in my opinion, play two up front, play some decent pacey wingers, you know. Give Ainsworth 90 minutes for a change. You know what I mean? Putting him on with 2 minutes to go is not going to do us any favours at all. I want to see us go out and I want to see us put a real effort in. I'd like to see Ainsworth Marvin Johnson on the wings, you know. I'd like to see both Moult and McDonald included up front because Kelly are there for the taking, and if we give them too much respect, we'll be punished.
How important is it that the fans react in a positive fashion? I know what you were saying about being stubborn, that's certainly a trait of Mark McGee, but I certainly don't think that he would hold back and play in a formation that he believes is going to win us the game just to wind up the supporters. So
I think you're probably right in that respect, but I think that in his head at the moment he probably thinks that he's right and everyone else is wrong, so whatever formation he feels is right might not necessarily agree with the supporters. It is important though that the supporters get behind the team, as always. I always say that you find out who you're most passionate and who your most avid supporters are when you're really down. It's very easy to be upbeat and all singing, all dancing when you're winning each week, you know, and you're challenging for Europe. But when you're down in the relegation positions, you know, a couple of points ahead above the playoff position, playing the team that's below you, that's when you really need the supporters to come out. And that's when you need to get them behind the team, you know, singing, being positive and giving them encouragement. What Motherwell are really, really bad for, in my opinion, is when you're down there, you know, it's getting a bit shaky, things are looking a bit nervous, one player plays a bad pass out the park, and everybody's on their back. You know, can you imagine you're in your work and you're trying to do your job and you do something wrong and everybody in the office turns around and starts slating you? It's not going to be good for your confidence at all. And Motherwell fans, and maybe we just think it's Motherwell fans because that's where we are each week, maybe all fans like this, but Motherwell fans, in my opinion, are really bad for getting on the players' backs when they go and get stuff.
Jay, normally after a bad result, you kind of want to get a game soon after to kind of eradicate the memories of that one. This week I was quite happy not to have a game and just kind of almost take a wee back seat from Motherwell for a few days and get that Scottish Cup tie out of my system. Now, coming closer to the weekend, I'm fairly positive about our chances in the next couple of games, and the significance of a couple of positive results are evident when you look at that league table. It could really boost our league placing and our standing in the league to almost kick on and remove any threat of the playoffs.
Well, that's it. We've got the benefit of the fact that the league table has been really, really close this season. If results had actually, you know, if we'd carried on the run we were on before that Hearts game, then, you know, we would get into these games expecting probably maximum points that could potentially take us, you know, into the top six or at least knocking on the door of it. I mean, that's how close the league is. Instead, we find ourselves in quite a dire situation, which will become even more dire if results don't go our way. So we have got that kind of leeway that we've got. You know, the opportunity is still there. You know, it's not the opportunity to kind of go up the table and kind of leapfrog a few teams hasn't been taken away yet. If we can start getting things right, then we can do so. But I'm kind of with Des in terms of the whole McGee situation. Since he's came in, as I've said before, he's an experienced manager. He's a decent manager. But since he's came in, some of his decision-making, both in terms of substitutions or lack of his team selection, and just some of the remarks he makes, it all kind of blends together to give you quite a net, or to give me personally quite a pessimistic expectation. When you're getting into games now, not being entirely sure, you know, if you've got a manager who can completely change your team, drop your top goal scorer, go with five across the midfield, purely because to counteract the threat of Inverness, Caledonian Thistle in a home cup tie, then you have to accept that he could do anything on Saturday. You know, he could identify one of their players and decide that we're going to change our entire system so we combat that one player. You know, it's quite concerning that, you know, that is perhaps the inferiority complex that surrounds our team at the moment, that we have to do those kind of things to play against generally average teams. So, you know, until the team's actually announced on Saturday, I would not rule out one up front. Or anything else, because that seems to have been, you know, part of, whether it was Marvin Johnson at left back and Dingwall, whether it was, you know, putting Marvin Johnson up front at Far Hill, you know, Josh Law in midfield at Tynecastle, he has the ability to put out an absolute clusterfuck of a lineup, and you know that possibility is there on Saturday.
Plus, it's hard to look beyond the Killer game and focus on the Dundee United game. But I guess the result on Saturday will dictate the mood that we go into the Tannadice clash in. And given how down in the luck Dundee United have been, it'd be good to kind of kick them again and keep them down and almost ensure that that 12th spot is theirs.
As you said, it's going to be vital. Saturday's result will probably be vital coming into the, you know, the Tuesday game. It'd be good to go in there, you know, with 3 points and a good frame of mind, as you says. Dundee United, I've not seen them in a while, to be honest with you. I don't know what the result was on Saturday. Were they in the cup on Saturday?
Yeah, they beat Partick Thistle 1-0.
The week before, they scaled Kilmarnock 5-0, did they not? So, you know, we're maybe coming towards to playing them at a bad time for us if they're putting together, you know, two or three games, depending obviously what who they're playing and what their score will be on Saturday as well. So again, from what I'm reading in the papers as well, they're basically getting rid of a lot of players. They've obviously brought in a lot of players as well. They seem to have brought in a lot of sort of, you know, guys that you used to buy in Champ 10 years ago. So I don't know how these players are, you know, how good these players are anymore, you know. So there's guys there, maybe 33, used to be good. I don't know if they've still got it. I don't suppose, you know, the saying is you don't lose any sort of class, but whether or not they've still got the drive and, you know, the physical abilities, I don't know, to be honest with you. So I'm going in blind here, to be honest with you. I don't know what Dundee United are even like.
Just a final point on the next couple of fixtures. Jay, do you think that the manager's maybe been given a wee bit of food for thought? I know that it's not first team football and possibly not the demands of first team football, but under 20s progressing into the semi-finals of the Youth Cup, a fantastic achievement. The club have never won the Scottish Youth Cup. Perhaps a few performances in there might have turned his head and given him a bit of food for thought, particularly given the excellent displays of Ben Hall and Chris Cadden when they've been given their chances?
You'd like to think so. It's difficult to kind of work out Mark McGee's plan with young players. Ben Hall, for example, I think was a complete surprise to most Motherwell fans, not just because Kieran Kennedy seemed to be doing quite well at centre-half, but just because, you know, he was a name that you were aware of that played in under-20s, but I don't think MD had really seriously discussed the prospect of him chapping on the door of the first team, and yet suddenly, you know, he was in the first team and was there, you know, every week until he unfortunately got injured at Fir Hill. So on that side of things, you could say, right, Mark McGee is obviously, you know, one to throw in a young player. But then when you look at his absolute reluctance to play Cadden or Leach at Tynecastle, instead, you know, completely changed the entire team, and also his, you know, desire to send Dom Thomas out on loan rather than having him in and around the first team, you know, that could be, you know, used as an argument for the complete opposite, that he perhaps doesn't favour young players. So it's really hard to, you know, it's something that I've not really worked out with McGee yet, just exactly what his kind of thought process is regarding young players. You would like to think that if they, you know, obviously in the semi-final, if they go on and even win, even just make the final, but if they were to go on and win the trophy, then you've got to say that there's not a lot more that your young team can do to kind of get the manager's attention. You'd like to think that would hopefully carve some sort of route for one or two of them to make it into the first team.
We'll finish off this week with the Remember Well question. Jay, I did a wee bit of your work for you and set the question, but I'm certainly not hosting this bit, so on you go.
Well, what was your question? It was, we're looking for players from the past you had an irrational dislike for. So I don't know what your reasons were behind that question. But
it was shamelessly stolen from TalkSport when I was out at work.
Right, fair enough.
And
well,
I thought it was quite interesting, actually, hearing some people's bizarre and wonderful reasons. A lot of them from Football Manager, it must be said, scored against their team in cup finals and things like that. And I found it quite amusing.
Well, John Maguire went with Ian Vigels. Ian Morton said Bob Malcolm. Ross Goodwin kind of summed up, I suppose, what Des was saying earlier about Motherwell fans being pretty bad for getting on the backs of players by going with Derek Adams, Sean Fagan and Maurice Ross. Ian Buchanan was obviously involved as usual. He says, Motherwell players none, but pick any off of this list. Just give you a few names: Paul Kane, Henry Smith, Darren fucking Jackson, John Brown, Andy Rhodes. So that was the Facebook ones. On Twitter, Chris Jack went with disco dancing FUD striker Callum Elliott. Brian McSmorton said Andy Roddy because he had a contract with Motherwell and I was clearly better than him. Craig Hargreave also went with Bob Malcolm. Gordon Reid went with Graham Buzz Smith. Steph went with Andy Roddy, poor guy, he didn't do much good or bad to be fair, but he used to get booed coming on as a sub. Also David Clarkson for fresh airing it one too many times. Tom McCutcheon went with Stevie Woods, Joe McLeod and Andy Roddy. Andy Roddy's getting a bit of power in here. Dave Taylor, think all my dislikes have been justified. I do enjoy the Dougie Emery rage though. I personally have nothing against the guy. Stu just went with Alex Burns, what a tit. Roy Purcell, wide player, went to St Mirren. Was it Paul Kinnaird? I'm not sure. I think that was pretty much it. Mark Mackay went with Sean Fagan. Stuart Faulkner said, what about the Well fans who refused to celebrate when Mickey Weir scored versus Dunfermline to keep us up? But I don't actually remember that at all.
We asked him for a bit of clarity in that as well, and we didn't get any.
Yeah, he's not replied. So that was it. I think there was a few there that kind of summed up, as I said, what Des was saying. You know, guys like Sean Fagan and Derek Adams, the guys who did the dirty work and were obviously doing their job quite correctly to get picked every week, and yet were kind of singled out by folk. I personally can't really think of any players that I dislike. I tend to like the players that you're meant to dislike. You know, your Neil Lennon's, your Paul Hartley's, your Scott Brown's, the guys, any player that can get, you know, guys frothing at the mouth in the stand, going mental at them with red faces, I think are fantastic. But I don't know if you guys have got any suggestions.
The player that I can't stand, and I couldn't stand him as a player, I couldn't stand him as a manager or assistant manager, and I still can't stand him to this day, is Ian Durrant. I think he's absolutely everything that sums up Rangers. So for me, it's got to be Ian Durrant.
Fair enough.
Well, see, that's my problem there. Me and you spoke about this, Jay, when Sparra told us he was going to set the question and told us what it was. Every time I thought of somebody, the rationalisation for why I didn't like them. So to have an irrational hatred for somebody, I just don't have. I can rationalise just about anything you tell me, and as you say, it might be because they're Mr. Rangers, might be because he scored a goal against us at one point. So I can't really think of anybody who I really dislike in the world of football, but I don't like Lewis Hamilton.
Is there any reason for that, Buster? Any rational reason for Lewis Hamilton?
We'll take that as a no.
Sorry, I didn't realise again I'd pressed the mute button there to have coughed, but Lewis Hamilton is just a wee wanker. A wee wanker, that's all. I mean, I was watching the NFL and, you know, he turned up at one of the games and they're like, oh, Lewis, how do you like this? And he's sitting there with his, you know, baseball cap on and his big chains and all that. And I was thinking, you are a wanker, pal. And again, there's no real reason for me even thinking that. But I'm raging. Look at me. Listen to me. I'm absolutely sitting here bealing.
My new one's only kind of just formed in the last couple of weeks, actually, after hearing them as a pundit, Tam McManus. And Tam McManus actually turned down a move to Motherwell at one stage in his career as well. And I thought, good, because you weren't good enough for us anyway. And then, after the Dundee game, he sat there. Well, I assume he was sitting, he was maybe standing when he was saying it. And honestly, you would have thought he was describing the most dull match that had ever taken place. Said that Dundee completely deserved the 3 points and everything else, despite the fact they'd got a spawny penalty in the 88th minute to draw 2 each. You're thinking, you're a knob. There was no way that... That's a problem with the Scottish media as well. They completely downplay our own game. It was a cracking game of football. It was played in difficult conditions. Both teams got stuck in. But he just was completely nonplussed about the whole thing. He just sounded like he didn't want to be there. And that really, really annoyed me. So maybe I've got a rational reason, but he's my pick anyway. And Amoruso as well. Add him into the mix.
Fair enough.
Right, well, guys, it's 12:15 on Friday morning now, so we'll wrap this up. Des, thanks for all your efforts this week, and I'm glad that we managed to finish it. I think people will find it worthwhile, and it's been really interesting for us guys having you on.
No worries, thanks for having us on, Andy. I felt as if I've done quite a lot of moaning in this podcast, which I usually feel when I come on I'm quite positive, but there's not been too much to be smiling about recently, so next time I'm on, hopefully we're not in a relegation battle and everything's rosy.
Yeah, don't worry, that's the reason we started this thing anyway.
It's a vehicle for our moaning.
No worries. Well, thanks for having us on, I appreciate that, guys. Cheers.
No problem. Jay, Buster, thanks as always, guys.
Cheers.
No bother, thank you.
Our podcast with Stephen McMillan was due for next week. It's going to be pushed back a couple of weeks due to a prior commitment for Stevie, but he says he'll definitely be on and he's looking forward to it, so hopefully we'll hear from him soon. We'll be back next Wednesday or Thursday with another late podcast, but we'll have the Kilmarnock game and the Dundee United game to look back on. Until then, thanks for listening and goodbye.